you're a professional. Oakland has a lot to play for. I mean, it may not, you know, they're obviously out of the playoff race, but, you know, they're playing for a lot of pride. You know, they probably have a new coach, so they're playing for their job. So there's never a meaningless game for any team. But most importantly for us, for our goals, you know, we want to have that bye week, allow us to rest up, get guys back healthy, especially on defense. And it'd be a good time to mentally get away from the game for a little bit and get ready for this stretch. So this week will be just like last week, another playoff-type atmosphere because of what we're playing for.
Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Happy holidays to everyone out there. And for that reason, we'll have a shorter edition today, compressed, just the nuts and bolts, all the essentials that you need and want in analysis, but we won't have as many quotes or extraneous fun stuff.
Well, because we'd like to think that everyone's having enough fun this week without needing that little extra overdose of fun from Ben Swanson and yours truly.
Exactly, and unfortunately, I think they'll look to the holidays to provide more fun than we can offer.
Yes.
Unfortunately, this past weekend, the Broncos dropped the Monday night game against Cincinnati. A close loss. It was one that's a bit frustrating, a bit disappointing more than anything to lose that game after a bit of a momentous comeback, coming back from 20-7 to 28-27 before losing 37-28. But it just looked like a lot of the chances they had, just like a lot of missed interceptions, just went through their hands.
Yeah, I mean, to look at that comeback in the third quarter for a minute, and you know, that part of it, watching it, I was encouraged for the Broncos seeing that, because you know they carried momentum from a drive at the end of the first half into the second half when they went no huddle. It ended in a missed field goal, but that was their most promising drive of the first half. And they came out and they pushed the tempo, and the offense really got into a rhythm, especially through the air, that hasn't been seen in a few weeks. And I think, you know, it's been good for the Broncos to establish that ground game in a more deliberate tempo over the last few weeks, because you're gonna need that element at some point in the postseason. But I think what we saw in the third quarter is that still what that offense does best and how it's most effective is when it's able to have those moments when it really mashes the accelerator, goes no huddle, and prevents the defense from adjusting to what they're doing. So that was a positive sign. But
I thought the rushing offense was okay.
But the biggest run was late on that last drive, late when the Broncos were down 37-28. So it was, you know, not as good as it has been, but you know, again, but and really, you know, they need a little more consistency from the running game, I think, in the first half when they were trying to kind of control the tempo. But knowing that, I think people had kind of wondered, oh, you know, they're running the ball now. Can they get it done if they go back to, you know, go back to being up tempo and passing the ball? In the third quarter, they did. But then you also have the four interceptions in the game. That's a concern. Still, in spite of all the mistakes, the four picks, one for a touchdown, two long returns, punt return, kickoff return, 20 Bengals points off short fields, 7 points directly off of a pick six. You know, in spite of a lot of mistakes, the Broncos had a chance to win on the road against a team that's leading its division, and like the Broncos, is going to its fourth straight postseason. So, you know, so really, I mean, when you step back and look at it, and you look at the film, and I think the players have done this as well. If they avoid the self-inflicted wounds that got them on Monday night, then that kind of if they can cut that out, then that kind of effort's going to win against almost anybody you play.
And one of the more disappointing things isn't even just that the loss itself, but what the loss means in the big picture, which is that the first seed, any chances of it are gone.
Yeah, they're gone. But I'm a realist.
Is it concerning much?
Not particularly, because I don't think the Patriots were going to lose to the Bills in Week 17 when Buffalo had nothing to play for, having been eliminated by the Raiders, and you know, and especially a Buffalo Bills team that would have, you know, that lost Marcell Dareus during the Raider game, and that really cost them. I don't think that weekend Bills team would have gone, would have had a chance of going into New England and playing a Patriots team that was straight up, you know, not trying to rest guys for the playoffs. I don't think that that Bills team would have had a chance to win. So really, I think as long as the Broncos get it done against the Raiders this weekend, I don't think that Bengals loss is really going to make a heck of a lot of difference. I think, you know, they would have been a 2 seed regardless. So it's really, you know, it's a frustrating loss, but maybe what you learn from that is more will carry you forward more than if you just won the game and still been the number two when all was said and done.
Overall, how concerned does this loss make you? I mean, you have errors on special teams, big returns, you know, turnovers were a problem that haven't really been that big of a problem.
I'm concerned about two things coming out of that, and I think if some fans who are listening will be surprised to hear that maybe I don't mention the passing game and I don't mention Peyton Manning, but I know people are. But at the same time, you know, games like that are exceptionally rare for him. And again, I point to the third quarter in the offense, finding that rhythm and quickly getting 3 touchdowns to show that, you know, they've still got that quick strike ability to put a lot of points on the board in a short time. I'm concerned about the special teams because now, you know, you had 2 explosive returns that led directly to 10 points, one on a punt, one on a kickoff. This has been a problem for 2 seasons for the Broncos. Right now, they're in the bottom 5 in kickoff coverage and punt coverage. And, you know, and what you're seeing is as you watch the game, you know, and Adam, don't call me Pac-Man Jones. Don't call him that anymore.
He's fearless.
He's fearless, but I think the word is out that it doesn't matter if it's a short kickoff or McManus drills it deep into the end zone. As long as that thing doesn't go over the end line, you're going to have a chance on a return. I think the secret is out, and you know, especially on the road. Now at home, McManus is going to blast almost every one of his kickoffs out of the end zone at 5,280 feet. But on the road, when you know he's still an outstanding kickoff guy, but and certainly he did his job in Cincinnati. 5 kickoffs, 1 went to the goal line, the other 4 went deep in the end zone or out of the end zone. You can't ask for more from Brandon McManus on kickoffs than what he did in Cincinnati Monday night. What happened that game is totally, you know, with Adam Jones with the long return that set up a touchdown. That's totally not on Brandon McManus. That's on the coverage teams now.
And how difficult is that with all the injuries in the linebacking core? We've seen guys like Steven Johnson, who are one of the stronger players on the coverage squads, and Todd Davis and players like this have had to commit more on the defensive side, more defensive reps.
It's exactly what happened last year. There were a few more losses to the defense overall, but certainly linebacker injuries are going to disproportionately affect the special teams, linebackers, and then like the next on that would be secondary, specifically like safeties and cornerbacks. And you know, lo and behold, Broncos have multiple injuries at linebacker, and with Quentin Carter out for the season, and T.J. Ward dealing with a neck strain right now, although he is you know, he's been practicing this week on a limited basis. You know, they're dealing with injuries at safety too, so you know that's part of it. But at the same time, even before you had these a wave of injuries, the kickoff and punt coverage teams weren't exactly tearing it up.
Right. Well, fortunately, still the 2 seed is still right there. A win and they're in, home field advantage up until possibly the AFC Championship, you know, if things go that way. But this isn't a season-ending loss. This isn't something that puts them you just feel like Coach Fox said, the sky is falling, but. It's far from it.
Most teams would kill for the sky to be falling between, you know, the way people consider it around here. I mean, the Broncos are 11-4. If they win Sunday against Oakland, they'll be 12-4. They've already clinched their 4th straight division title and 4th straight playoff bid. They've won, you know, 37 going for 38 regular season games in the last 3 years. You know, the panicky crowd, I can't relate to that, and I don't know. I'm I have a different perspective on this because I didn't grow up in Denver. I grew up, you know, in Virginia and then moved to Florida when I was 11, just outside of Tampa. And I got to Tampa and picked up the Buccaneers right about one-third of the way into their 14 consecutive losing seasons run from 1983 through 1996. I just can't, and I can't relate to fans who are all up in arms over a team that's been as successful as the Broncos have. I can't relate to the panic that sets in after every loss. I mean,
I think they sense an urgency that
there's an they sense an urgency and an opportunity. But at least you're right there. And look at the recent history of the postseason. Last year, when you had two number one seeds make the Super Bowl, that was the exception. You know, Baltimore, world champion 2012. You know, they had to play the wild card round. Then they had to go on the road for two games. 2011, New York Giants, you know, 9-7, winning their division, had to play two road games. 2010, Green Bay. If not for a Tampa Bay collapse against Detroit in December, Green Bay doesn't even go to the playoffs. And then when they get in, they have to go on the road all the way. So basically, I mean, really, when guys talk about how, look, doesn't really matter, you know, home, you know, the point is to get in the tournament. Recent history backs that up. That, you know, that really your chances of getting the Super Bowl are not greatly enhanced by having the number one seed or even having a home game. It's about being the best team in January. And I think, assuming the Broncos can get Brandon Marshall back, and I think that was another key point that concerned me, was you just can't replace a guy who, as Jack Del Rio said, is having a Pro Bowl season. You just can't replace him without a drop-off. So that's to be expected. But he was missed, and I think the entire outcome of the Bengals game would have been different if Brandon Marshall had played. No offense to, you know, what guys like Todd Davis and Steven Johnson did stepping in. I mean, they did their best. They played their tails off. But Brandon Marshall is one of the best weak side linebackers in the game today, in the game right now, and you don't simply replace him without having some kind of drop off. I mean, there's as a wise man has told me, there's a reason why backups are backups.
And plus, just going back to the playoff picture, I think there might be some recency bias as far as, you know, people are so scared by this loss, and it's a pretty close one. You look at all these other teams, except for New England, Cincinnati having lost to
Pittsburgh.
Yeah, they lost
at home by 21.
Yeah, you look at Indianapolis, and they lost to Dallas.
Green
just
Bay
past
just
weekend.
Lost at Buffalo over in the NFC. You know, and no one's writing them off as a Super Bowl contender because they lost at Buffalo. Seattle's had not recently, but Seattle's had some stinkers.
Yeah,
this year, and then
St.
just
Louis.
Recent history. Every Broncos fan ought to remember when their team marched into Baltimore in week 15 2 years ago and destroyed the Ravens. I mean, the final was 34-17, but I think you probably all remember it was 31-3 after the third quarter, and fans were streaming out of M&T Bank Stadium. And then the Ravens come back to Denver 4 weeks later in the divisional round, and I don't need to belabor that game. I'm sure everyone remembers it. That's the thing you have to consider. All you've done is get yourself a home game. If the Broncos, you know, win Sunday, they've gotten themselves one more round through. Like Peyton Manning said on ESPN Sunday night, why that Bengals game was big was, you know, because they could clinch a bye week, and it was like advancing one round in the playoffs. And the Broncos still have that opportunity in front of them against the Raiders on Sunday. But beyond that, you've got nothing. I mean, New England, that everyone seems so scared of, New England lost at home in the 2010 playoffs, lost at home in the 2012 playoffs, lost at home in the 2009 playoffs. They're not invincible in Foxborough.
Well, before we get to all that, as you said, we have the Raiders coming up this weekend. Now, the Raiders are a bit of a different team than we saw last time. Last time they were 0-8, I think they went 0-9 after the the whomping they took from the Broncos in the black hole. But now they are 3-2 in their last five games. They're now 3-12 on the season. So, I mean, still not a great year, but things are looking up. Derek Carr has been playing better. Their defense has been playing better. They beat some pretty good teams in the Chiefs and the Bills.
They knocked the Bills. 49ers. Yeah, they knocked the Bills out of the playoffs with that win Sunday. They had the 49ers win was in between that. All of their wins are at home. I mean, so I'm just going to offer that to, that caveat there. They figured it out at home, but they have struggled on the road. And in the middle of that was a 52-0 thrashing. Pardon me, that the Raiders suffered at St. Louis back on November the 30th. So it's going to be interesting to see whether the Raiders can, you know, overcome some of their road difficulties. Although the week before the Broncos went into Oakland, the Raiders went up to Seattle and took them down to, you know, down to the end of the game, 30-24 loss, an onside kick. If the Raiders had managed to recover, they would have had the ball with a chance to win the game in Seattle. So this is, you know, this is definitely not the team that really looked like it couldn't get out of its way at times. This is a pretty solid team. You talked about Derek Carr. He's playing better. You know, they're getting much, much better production on the ground the last few weeks. And then you look
at Latavius Murray's been a very key player for them.
He kind of had that game against Kansas City where, you know, he only got the ball a handful of times, but he maximized.
Well, he had a concussion in the.
Yeah, he had a 28 yards per carry average, I believe, in that game. So you're not going to have that every week, but certainly he's carried that momentum. And I think he's made Darren McFadden more effective because McFadden's almost kind of been the, you know, maybe not a change of pace, but certainly they're platooning with each other, and I think it's keeping McFadden fresh. McFadden had a big run late in the win over Buffalo on Sunday. So,
that's so key for them is to get that ground game going. You don't want Carr to be trying to throw 50-something times.
It takes the pressure off of him because Carr, he doesn't yet have the quality and array of targets. So he's got to kind of make things happen on his own. Maybe he's got to, you know, he's got to deliver the ball perfectly. And we actually saw, you know, a very nice deep ball against the Bills on Sunday. But he doesn't have those kind of elite game breaking targets yet. I think that's something the Raiders are certainly going to look to do in the offseason. I expect them to be heavily in play for any elite tight end or receiver that happens to be on the market to try and help David Carr. But the running game's going in the right direction. Defensively, you know, Khalil Mack had an outstanding year that hasn't necessarily reflected in the sack count, although he has been better at finishing off his pass rush, which has always been effective even right from the get-go. He and Justin Tuck work really well off of each other. And, you know, you look at the Broncos going against them. You know, Luis Vasquez and Ryan Clady, both the tackles, both struggled in Cincinnati. Both allowed multiple pressures on Peyton Manning in that loss. And I think certainly it's going to be a challenge for those guys on the outside to deal with Tuck and Khalil Mack. And actually, I'll say this for Mack. He's going to be a challenge for everyone on the offensive line because they love to move him around. They're going to try to just expose whatever mismatch is there, whether it's on the outside, whether you're going to stun him through the A-gap. They'll use him in a lot of different ways. The key, Tuck is very good. He's still an effective pass rusher, but the guy you want to watch pre-snap is Khalil Mack because they're gonna try to move him around. They're gonna try to set up mismatches and get him. And I think the Broncos are going to be aware before every snap of where Khalil Mack is. That's the first guy you've got to look out for.
That facet of the game is where the Broncos were so effective last time. Not only that. They that was passed his, for 340 yards, but that was C.J. Anderson's breakout game.
That was his breakout game. And they neutralized Khalil Mack in a way that no one else has this year. Really took him out of the game. You know, he had one of the missed tackles on C.J. Anderson's that big catch and run that really kind of introduced him to the NFL almost. I think you know. That play was replayed so many times and for good reason. I mean, it's probably.
I think he ran double the yardage
I believe he did. I think he got over 100 yards of actual territory covered because he crossed the field and then took it an angle. It was amazing. I'd say still the play of the year for the Broncos. I don't think there's anything that really compares to that.
And then you have Peyton Manning, who had five touchdowns on that game. bounced back from an early deficit.
And two early interceptions.
Yeah.
And actually, we mentioned Justin Tuck. I mean, he really, you know, they Tuck kind of kept him off guard because on the second interception, remember, Tuck kind of dropped back in the coverage a little bit, and I don't think Peyton Manning really saw him. And, you know, he just made a very nice play in the open field.
That I forgot about that game a little bit. Early on, he was just having trouble, like, getting the passes over the fingertips of the D linemen.
Yeah, they were, and that's another thing they do well is their D linemen. If they don't get pressure, they're coached very well. They get their hands up. You know, it's a team that still is lacking in the talent you need to win. In a lot of players on the roster, they're probably at least another off season away, and of drafting, of player acquisition and development. But they're a well coached team. And aside from a momentary loss of focus at the end of the Chiefs game that we all know about with Khalil Mack, like them, they didn't realize they had to line up for another play. Aside from that, it's actually a very disciplined team. And the other thing I like about the Raiders is, you know, going forward, they found their quarterback and they found their defensive heart and soul. And Khalil Mack. So you've got the two core pieces. Now you're building around that. It's a lot easier to build when you've got the two core guys that you can go with. And they found them in this past year's draft. And I think Raiders fans are gonna look back on the 2014 draft and say, boy, that was the moment things really started to turn around for him for that franchise.
Another funny thing about the mindsets coming into this game is that, you know, the Raiders are obviously coming off a much better time than the previous weeks they had coming into the earlier game against the Broncos. But the Broncos are coming into this game like they did in the last one, coming off a loss. Naturally, we looked at that earlier game and said, well, this is a game they're going to try and just smash the Raiders, get back on track. You know, after coming off a New England loss that was frankly just a blowout, they just came out and trounced the Raiders. Do you think this is, I would imagine this is the same kind of thing here.
Same kind of thing they're going to want to do, but let's remember in the game back in Oakland that it took a while to get going, that the Broncos did trail into the second quarter, that you know, they were bogged down by their own mistakes early before settling down and really finding a groove. So it would not surprise me if the game this Sunday takes on a similar pattern, that if the Raiders do jump out and take an early lead. And while I think the Broncos have a chance to win and win comfortably, it would not surprise me if it's a much closer game and much more competitive for longer than the game in Oakland was. Because, like we said, this is simply a better Raiders team than the one that they saw back in November. More confident, you know, again, they've done it at home. They've been unbeaten at home since losing to the Broncos, and I think they're eager to see if they can translate it on the road and end the season on a positive note. Certainly if they win Sunday, you know, you'll look at the end of their season and say, you know, wow, 4 wins in 6 games, they're in the right direction. And you know, given what we talked about with already having core players like Derek Carr and Khalil Mack in there, I think that's a pretty potent motivation for them going into this game.
And one of the things that we've been focusing on for the Broncos in each of the past weeks as the season goes on is injuries. After Wednesday's injury report came out, only 4 DNPs. One of those was Brandon Marshall, who was back out there on Thursday, just doing some individual stretching, stuff like that, just moving in the right direction.
And the other 3 guys that were sick,
yeah,
were back. So
Paul Kornick was limited, which was good to see after some DNPs the last week.
They're back Thursday, yeah. So, you know, so really, you know, they appear to be on the mend a little bit. But again, you know, they listed 20 names on the injury report Wednesday. Most of those guys still practiced on a full basis. But at the same time, just tells you how beat up this team is. A lot of nagging injuries. And that's why, you know, even though the bye guarantees you nothing but a home game in the second week of the playoffs, I think it's essential for this Broncos team to win because, you know, they're about to play their 13th consecutive game without a respite. This is a team that really needs a break physically and even mentally, too, to kind of reset in time for the postseason.
That's what Terrence Knighton was saying in his availability on Wednesday in the locker room. Well, with that, I think we've covered all the bases we need to, so we'll wrap up our shortened podcast for this week. Don't forget, you can subscribe on iTunes, and no quotes this week, sorry, but hope everyone has a nice holidays, and we'll get back with you for a full one next week.